Happy 2022. Welcome to this episode of Record of Change and Happy New Year. I hope this episode finds you all healthy, well, and ready to tackle the new year of excitement, growth, development, and thriving, right? But while still navigating this pandemic. Deep sigh. My name is Stephanie Rabel, and I'm the host of this episode of Pandemic Era Transitions. So how do we thrive or at least cope through the transitions of this pandemic? How do we reset our new normal? Apologies for saying new normal. But there are new social norms, new jobs, new ways of parenting, different complexities to aging and retirement. So most of us have experienced both losses and gains during the pandemic. And in this episode, we'll be hearing stories from people who met the pandemic challenges as an opportunity for change. We'll discuss the topic of pandemic transitions and learn how we can better understand transition as part of our lives. But first, if you're new to Record of Change, welcome. In our original episodes, you can follow the stories of individuals from around the world and their journeys in the first 15 months of the pandemic at different points in time. Our newest episodes are topically centered, just like this one, capturing themes and trends that have emerged throughout and because of the pandemic. We're really excited to have both of our guests today, but for now, let's meet up with our Record of Change co-host for this episode, Matthias, who will tell us a little bit more about his own experiences with pandemic transitions. I'll probably talk about mine as well. So let's get into it. The Record of Change audience should know who you are by now, but if we have any new listeners, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and where you are right now?
Yeah, I'm Matthias. I'm sitting in Berlin right now. And here I'm working as a program and fundraising manager for a media NGO. And I'm the father of a one-year-old.
So, first of all, what about this particular episode was of interest to you?
The last 2 years have been maybe more exciting than I would have wished for. So there were many transitions. Some were expected and planned for. Some were very unexpected. I got married. I became a dad. We always said that's 2020 is a corona experience. I was working for an international organization in Ramallah, Palestine. I had just started in January, so it was just 10 weeks or so when it arrived there to Israel and Palestine. I left Ramallah back to Germany because we were allowed to end of March when corona hadn't really arrived yet to Israel and Palestine. We moved to Germany where things were already very bad, and my wife and me moved into my childhood bedroom thinking it would be just for a couple of weeks, as all of us thought it would be over soon. By then we already knew that my wife was pregnant. In September we became parents, which of course is a life-changing transition for everyone. The combination of being a new dad to a newborn and corona still ongoing or really hitting Palestine back then, end of 2020, no vaccines yet. We decided not to go back to Ramallah, so I didn't extend my contract, didn't go back. We were a bit stuck in Germany. I always called it our corona exile in my childhood bedroom, which in the end lasted almost a year and a half. So it took a while to find a new job. Then we relocated and we moved from Bonn, Western Germany, to Berlin, the capital. And I started a new job in June. When you talk to me now, it feels very normal. Everything just passed by and things are good. We are safe and we are healthy and we are happy to be in Germany right now. And we are happy parents. But of course, it's been an exciting ride.
You checked off every box of what transition you might experience during this time in terms of job change, adding a member to the family. Right. Even just the experience of the pandemic itself is a new transition for all of us. Just adds layers and layers of fun. On my account, I feel like it was slightly less exciting, but at the same time, it involved quite a bit. So for me, I was living in a different state at the start of the pandemic itself. My husband and I were both employed by the same employer, and about 6 months afterwards, he was laid off, as many people were. That kind of sent him into a tailspin, and he ended up having to rapidly try to change his career. And part of the impact on me is that I'm sitting trying to hold down the fort with my job. And at the same time, I don't know if his job is going to cause us to have to move, which it did. Mm-hmm. So when we think about 2021, in the beginning of the year, I was living in a different place, had a different job. I myself got the opportunity to switch jobs within the same organization. But what that meant is I couldn't say bye to my previous colleagues in a way that I wanted to. So I had to give my notice over the summer when I hadn't seen many of my colleagues for about a year and a half at that point. So it just felt really hard to make that transition myself. My husband ended up getting a new job this fall. Mm. We ended up moving over the summer. So yes, a lot of things, a lot of stress throughout the way. And now, again, it feels very normal. But as you're going through it, incredibly, incredibly painful and stressful and not knowing what's going to happen.
Actually, now that you mentioned these ups and downs and fears, I also felt like this, especially this year and a half in what I call our Corona exile, it feels like a different time and space, a transition period which lasted quite long. But for a very long time, we thought it's just a couple of weeks and then we go back to Ramallah. And then, okay, our daughter will be born soon. And then you just focus on end of pregnancy. You don't focus on anything else. And then it was just like hanging in there. Just there's something coming. We just have to be patient. I'm not a patient person at all. So now that I think of it, yeah, it really feels like a big black hole. And not only black, because it would be too bad, but it feels like this things happened in a fog, in a cloud of a year and a half. And now life is kind of set back. Your two interviewees, who are they and why did you find them or interview them and not other people?
So let me tell you a little bit more about the exciting guests that we have for this particular episode. Our first guest is Mary Glazier, founder of Gerfer Lady in West Palm Beach, Florida. She's someone I met just recently, so I am a part of a group that is called the Social Enterprise Alliance, and I happened to put a post out saying, hey, does anybody know anybody who's shifted careers over this time? And Mary responded. As soon as I heard Mary's story, I thought, oh my goodness, this is what a lot of people are secretly dreaming of. Mary's originally from South Carolina, and she's been a surfer for many years now, but she founded her surf instructing business, Gerfer Lady, in West Palm Beach, Florida, during the pandemic. She was formerly a director of hospitality and sales at a retreat venue, and now she actually has translated that experience in hospitality to teach women from 5 to 70 how to surf, and men too. When the wave conditions are less than ideal, she'll focus in on her artwork, which is mainly in the mediums of embroidery and collage. Her business, Gerfer Lady, not only provides surf lessons, but community grill outs and mental health events as well. When it comes to Dr. Nancy Schlossberg, that one was an obvious one that as soon as I thought of this particular concept, she is someone who is a renowned clinical psychologist, an academic, someone who's research field has dealt with transitions and how people transition into various things. So not only just career transitions, but if someone's retiring, if someone is bringing on a baby into the family, if someone is experiencing any life change, or what she frames as a non-event, which she'll explain, of occasions that don't happen that we expected to happen. And so when we thought of this idea, I thought she would be a really natural fit for this.
So we should listen to them. Let's go.
Mary, thank you for joining. I'm so excited to hear a little bit more about your story. And thank you for speaking with me today.
Yes, I'm so excited to be on here.
Can you start us off on what you were doing in your career before the pandemic and help us get a little bit of an orientation as to where you started?
Yeah, definitely. So I was the director of hospitality and sales for a retreat and conference venue down here in South Florida. I was hosting a lot of events, week-long meditation conferences, or a lot of really fun groups. So I was in charge of hosting and coordinating all those logistics between our staff and all those retreats. I was deep in the hospitality world and I did love my job. It was a lot of work, I will say, but because it was such a fun hosting job and that's my personality. Actually, January, February, March, that's really our in season where it really gets kicking. I had been preparing for the January to May groups for about a year.
Wow.
So that was a bit disappointing in the middle of March. And I remember us cleaning up our office and being like, oh, we'll be back in a few weeks. This is just a weird thing. And I also remember we actually had an international group, and that is bonkers to think about now.
When did it happen that you've decided to make this transition? So what factors were at play that led you to your idea? What in the pandemic led you to start your own business?
So actually, I was with the retreat venue up until this past January. I am so thankful they kept me on to keep our online presence, to continue relationship with all of our groups and other online logistics. But then in January, just felt like, I don't think I want to keep doing this. I don't think I want to keep trying to decide whether to reopen and not, and host large groups and like make those decisions. So I just felt like there was a timing in January where I was like, I had been like wrestling with all of those decisions for these large groups that I quit with no plan, actually. No plan of what I'm doing now. Absolutely none. I was just like, I don't think this is where I need to be. I was just doing a lot of side hustles for probably 3 to 4 months. I've surfed for most of my life, like 13 years. And I grew up surfing in South Carolina, moved down here about 8 years ago. And there were a few friends that just started sending surf lessons my way. Then I was like, wow, this is pretty fun. And then I put a little more structure behind it, made an Instagram, kept getting more and more bookings. And then I got in with a luxury boutique hotel here. I'm based in West Palm Beach, Florida. And so once I got in with them, I definitely got my stuff together.
Yes.
And a lot more structure. And that kind of led me to becoming full-time. I'm just crazy thankful for the synchronicities of all of it and the people that just kept encouraging me along the way. And I think there's such a need and a niche for a woman surf instructor, just because it's mostly male dominated. And so that's why it went full-time so fast, was because there aren't many. Now it's my full-time gig that I teach lessons like 5 days a week, and I do art on the side, and I do some community events through the platform and some mental health events as well.
Now, do you see a lot of women clients?
Yeah. So I mostly teach women from about 20 to 60. I do not say no to men as well, or kids. I teach everyone, but mostly market to and teach women from that age range. It's been super incredible to be able to hone in and create a space for women to do that. There are so many surf schools and such for kids, but then the moms also have this like bucket list desire to surf too. Like, it shouldn't be just for the kids or just when they were younger. I've developed such a lifestyle of surfing, of like surfing before my 9 to 5 or after it. I love creating the space for others to do that. I'll teach a lesson right before 7 to 8 a.m. and some of the women will go to work after or right after work. And so it's been really incredible to hear so many of their stories and to provide a need that maybe wasn't there before. I've just heard so many stories of like, oh, I surfed when I was with my ex-husband who surfed, and I haven't done it since because it still hurts, you know, or I used to surf until I got cussed out in the lineup just because I was a girl and I was out there, or I've just always been intimidated to surf. It's been so, so fun to provide a space for mostly women to come together and just surf together.
So I'd love to ask you, do you think any of this would have unfolded if it hadn't been for the pandemic?
Absolutely not. No. Because I think I did love my job where I was at, and I was very passionate about hospitality. And I think I'm still doing hospitality in a different way. But I will also say, I think my passion for hospitality got overworked a bit in that last job. And so it was like addictive, I think, when we're passionate about something and it's met with a business that needs that type of work energy. Yeah, I think I would have just still been kind of like a workaholic. And I don't know if I would have broken that cycle.
What was it about the pandemic environment that really gave you this insight? When was that realization that you're like, oh, I could do something different, or I could try something different? Or what factors kind of played into that thought?
I think during that year-ish, from March to quitting in January, I really leaned into the time and space that we had. I was very thankful to have a few roommates during that time. I remember being a part of a Zoom group. We were going through an artist creativity book kind of thing. And I remember just so much inner work happening within the time and space I had away from everyone, that it like allowed me to see some things that were worth it in my life and things that weren't worth it. You know, I love my job. It's so fun when things are going well, but I'm seeing that most of the time I'm pretty stressed and anxious about like being in charge of all these things. And so I think finally having the space to add those things up and say, okay, my mental health is more worth taking care of than this job with benefits. You know, it can be replaceable, but that can't. I'm very thankful for space that happened. I got super creative during that time as well. I started experimenting with new mediums of my collages. I never thought my little dinky card collages would ever be anything. And I started putting them in frames. And now they're in a few restaurants around town. I sell custom collages all the time. And it's crazy to me that just having the time and extra space to just kind of be like, oh, what if I just taught these lessons? What if I just bought a beginner board to teach people? That's not the worst thing that'll happen. I'll just have another surfboard.
Yes.
So I think it was like all these what ifs that kept opening me up to the possibility that I don't have to stay at this job for 5 more years kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I would love for you to talk about how you started surfing.
I started surfing 7th grade when my older brother, he passed away. And so he was a surfer and I took up surfing just to connect with him, to feel what he felt. At the time, I didn't know the psych things behind it, but it was such an incredible way to just grieve and honor him. That's how I took up surfing and I fell in love with it. I've done something kind of in honor of him every year. And since I had this platform this year, I put on a paddle out grief event. So usually in the surf community, people would do a paddle out in honor of one person in the community that may have passed away. Like whenever someone might pass away, there's a paddle out where everyone paddles out and lets out an emotion expressive of what they're feeling about the grief. So I put on an event for people to come and represent a loved one who had passed away in their life. So that was really, really amazing to see and just an amazing way to honor him as well. That's like how I started surfing, and I still love that I connect with him through that.
Help us understand your current job. What have some of the ups and downs been in the better part of a year? Tell us a little bit about the day-to-day.
It is very fun. It is so dependent on the weather. South Florida weather is just so all over the place My week-to-week, day-to-day is that I post time slots every week and people will plug into those time slots. I have a surf practice class I do every week for individuals who may have had a surf lesson or two or may have surfed before, but really want a group setting to be able to paddle out with. Maybe they don't feel comfortable paddling out on their own yet. So that's really fun. And then I do a grill out every month, every other month. And it's just been so fun to see so many of the people I meet one-on-one, like connect and create community, just because so many of these individuals that I teach, so many of them actually moved back or moved here during COVID. So many want to have an outdoor activity. I think that's a huge cause of the pandemic, is people want to be outdoors more, which is great.
So I can imagine, I know the answer to this already, but are you happy that you made this change?
Yes, I love it. It's been amazing. And I've loved being able to create like a lifestyle of surfing into like a business lifestyle of surfing. And I love being my own boss. It's something that runs in my family. I don't know if I could ever go back. I think I've always had an entrepreneurial kick to me. And this finally let me kind of use that. So I'm definitely happy I made this choice.
So what advice would you give to other people? I'm sure that there are people listening that have been aspiring to make this leap. What advice you would give someone who's curious about making a step into doing something that is their passion space?
A lot of what ifs questions, like being curious about what you actually want your day-to-day to look like. What type of social time do you want in your day-to-day? Like, what do you value in your day-to-day? And what if it looked different? What if it looked like working remote? What if you still love your job and you want to stay in that? I think a lot of what if questions and curiosities of what if this looked different. And also, I like grew up with my dad being an accountant. He let us be very creative and he kind of let us dream a lot, but he always asked us to just do the numbers behind it. I think that's just really crucial advice for being able to take that next step of just do the math behind it and do what you can.
And now you get to share that through your passion space. Have you noticed that people during the pandemic are also seeking novelty, or that they're seeking to connect with themselves more than you would have imagined before?
Definitely. That was also something that I learned through that paddle out event as well, is that I had partnered up with a lot of local therapists to kind of give them exposure and to give them a platform. And all of them are fully booked. And I also had other organizations that provide other therapeutic ways of coping with isolation, anxiety, depression. It was really awesome to see those other organizations, to see that those things are so crucial right now, because therapists are so booked and everyone is really focusing on that, because we've only like been able to just look at ourselves really the last year, look at who am I, what am I doing, all those existential questions.
Yeah. I feel as though this is something that a lot of people need, and thank you for providing the space so people can find each other. Mary, thank you so much for sharing with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I was so stoked to share.
What about Mary's story resonated with you?
I would say Mary's story resonated with me in a sense that she did, as you said in the beginning, she did something that many people dream of, and she just did it. It feels a bit like a cliche, but it's such a nice cliche. Leave your office job and go to the ocean. I think so many people around me would say like, yeah, maybe one day I will just move to somewhere Mediterranean Sea here in Europe, Greece, Italy, Spain, Portugal, and open a cafe and play guitar all day. But hardly anyone does it, of course. So she did it.
It sounds like a lot of Mary's work keeps her in the moment, where she can genuinely just be with people and to hear why they're there, to sit with them and to be present. And I think we all find that in a different way.
Right.
Our second guest, Dr. Nancy K. Slosberg, is a professor emerita of the Department of Counseling and Personnel Services at University of Maryland's College of Education, where she was a tenured full professor for 27 years. She's also served on the faculties of Wayne State University, Howard University, and Pratt Institute. She's the author of 10 books, with her most recent being Too Young to Be Old, where she discusses transitions as we age. She's delivered over 100 keynote addresses, and her work has been featured anywhere from Time Magazine to USA Today to the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and beyond. Nancy, thank you for speaking with me today. It's really exciting to get to meet you and to finally get to hear a little bit about your work. Perhaps it's helpful for us to first talk about transitions in life. So what are transitions?
Well, you know, we're always in transition, but there are different kinds of transitions, and we throw the word around. We all use the word, but what does it really mean? So the way I've defined it is that a transition is an event like retirement, like job change, like having a baby. It's an event or a non-event. And that's a whole other subject, but a non-event is something you expected to happen that doesn't happen. So for example, if you've written a book and it's got a publisher, you have a book party. If you can't get your book published, and that's something you expected and wanted, it's a non-event. Now, it might be a delayed event because maybe eventually you'll get it published. But anyway, back to the definition. A transition is an event or a non-event that changes you. The four things: it changes your role, your relationships, your routines, and your assumptions. You might be going through three transitions simultaneously. You've just gotten divorced. You've just gotten promoted. So there are two different kinds of transitions, one probably positive and the other a mixed bag. To figure out how strong a transition is, you ask yourself, has it changed everything? My role, relationship, routines, assumptions, or has it just changed my routines? So, for example, if you are an acting director of a project and you are made director, what has changed? Probably your assumptions. It's a transition, but it's not as dramatic as if you get a job in another city and it's changed everything: roles, relationships, routines, assumptions. So I always think of transitions like it's a way of assessing how important it is to your life. Is it a biggie or a little one? Is it an event or non-event? Is it negative or positive?
In the media, there's a concept in the US and in other countries that's getting a lot of attention. It's that great resignation, with employees opting to either quit or not to work at all, or maybe retire earlier than when they were expecting. So with all of these people making this leap towards a career transition, a new position, a new employer, a new industry, or becoming an entrepreneur, what advice would you give to those who are either in or considering this type of transition?
Well, in our research over the years and many different kinds of transitions, the question comes up, why did I handle this transition one way, but looking back, I handled transitions differently? What's the difference between how I have handled transitions over the years? And if I'm looking at a group, how come there's a variety? Some people handle this well and some not well. So what are the factors? And that's what I call the 4S system. The things that will make a difference as you're handling any transition is, first, at the time of the transition, what is your situation? If you are facing a pandemic and you've been diagnosed with a serious illness and you can't travel to the hospital and so forth and so on, your situation is not good. If this is going on when you're in the midst of caregiving for a partner, your situation isn't good. So let's say you look at your situation and you say, is it positive? Is it negative? What about your support system? what kind of supports do you have? So you look at your supports, both institutional and your personal supports. Are people in your family supportive? Are your colleagues supportive? Are your friends supportive? So is your support system, looking at all parts, all aspects of it, is it a plus, a minus, or benign? The third is yourself, what you bring to the transition. Some people are optimists. They see the glass is half full. They say, this will soon be over. And other people are pessimists. And they say, oh my gosh, this is going to be forever. And they catastrophize. So you have to know yourself. Are you a help in your transition? Or are you sabotaging yourself? And the fourth, which is really important, is what kind of coping strategies you use. So if you look at it, these four S's are really your potential resources for dealing with the pandemic or any transition. You look at your situation. If your situation is chaotic at this time, that doesn't help you. But your situation won't be that way forever, hopefully. So you look at your situation, you look at your supports, you look at yourself, and you look at your coping strategies. So if you look back at a transition that you handled poorly, and you look at one you handled well, think about what was the difference? What was your situation, supports, self, and strategies? And it might help explain the difference in how you handled a transition.
I would love to hear that. In fact, that's such a huge part of this pandemic time that people are looking for, how do I cope through this experience?
I think I'm going to illustrate this with a story. I was maybe 40 years old when this happened. I was invited to speak in Denver, and I was on a sabbatical at the American Council on Education, and I was to speak to college presidents. It was all arranged at the office. There were no emails. And I saw the person who was heading up the project in the office, and I said, I'll see you. My plane gets in on Friday. And she said, great. So I get on the plane. I get to Denver. I go to the hotel. They said they've never heard of me, and they've never heard of the American Council on Education. So I thought, oh my gosh, I wrote down the wrong place. So I call back the American Council, and they tell me that it's the wrong month, that I'm there in October, and the meeting is in November.
Oh, no.
So what did I do? What every feminist shouldn't do. I called my husband, got him out of a meeting, and broke down and cried. Well, he said to me, Nancy, you've got to pull yourself together. Your book, Overwhelmed, Coping with Life's Ups and Downs, has just been published. And this will be very bad for sales if you can't handle this. So I hung up from him. And although I'd written a lot about coping, I had never written that you need to spend money if you have it. So I left the hotel that I was thought I was to be in. And I went across the street to the Brown Palace. And I asked for the expensive restaurant. So I sit down. And the maitre d' takes me over, and I said, I can't sit down till I tell you what I'm going through. I need a support system. I don't have one here. And I told him what happened. Well, I drink very little and certainly don't drink martinis at lunch or ever. He brought me a martini at lunch to calm me down. I couldn't drink it. It was too sour. But anyway, I sat there at lunch, and I'm thinking, is there anything in my book, Overwhelmed, Coping with Life's Ups and Downs, that really is useful? Or was this just a book of pages? This is a test of my work. And I remembered what I wrote about coping. In studying the people who've done the best work in coping, and that's in all my books, I name them and reference them. The important thing to remember is there is no coping magic strategy. And that sometimes one strategy works, sometimes another. So the effective coper is the person who can use lots of strategies flexibly. Now, there are hundreds and hundreds of coping strategies, but you can categorize them into those strategies where you want to change what's happened, those where you can't change what's happened. If there's a chance that you can change what's happened, you can start brainstorming how to change it. So if you can change it, you can't change the pandemic. It is here. An individual, you only have control over yourself and your reactions, but you can't change the pandemic. So then what do you do when you can't change something? Then you try to reframe and look at it differently and say, today is not forever. So I sat there at lunch at the Brown Palace and I said, even if I hire the most expensive lawyer in the world, even if he or she charges $1,000 an hour, I cannot make October, November. It just won't happen. So I need to go and look at it a little differently. So I was thinking, I'm becoming kind of a dowdy professor. So maybe I can see myself, okay, I came to Denver for lunch. I could go to San Francisco for dinner. This will sort of loosen me up. And then I thought, well, I'm a counselor type. I like to help people. So everybody misses an appointment, but nobody misses a month by a month. So I'm really helping people. They can say, oh, I forgot the lunch or the meeting, but it wasn't as bad as Schlossberg did. So I went through a whole thing of how I could look at this differently. Plus, I knew I would come back the following month. I mean, I had to. And I would have a great opening for my speech. You have never had a speaker more eager to speak to you. So I'm getting happier and happier as I'm sitting at lunch. I then, no matter whether you can or cannot change it, whether or not you can reframe it, you need to relax. So you can meditate, exercise, do whatever it takes to get your mind away from suffering. And there was a shopping street in Denver. So I finished my lunch. I went up and down the shopping street aerobically, in and out of shops. And so by the end of the afternoon, I was really in pretty good shape. But it's very simple. Can you change what's happening? Can you change the way you see it? And whether or not you do that, you need to have some strategies that you use to relax. So that's my coping story.
I love that story. And I think the best part of it is the perspective taking that you're able to do in the moment. And I'm glad that your husband reminded you of your own words and allowed you to kind of come down from that and to say, oh, I can actually make something of this. And I love the fact that you used it in your talk the next month. I'm sure that got lots of laughs.
Oh my God. Well, this is really funny. I used to run a conference, a yearly conference at Maryland. And I would tell the story. And one day I asked everybody, how many of you have heard my Denver story? So many hands went up and I said, well, I can't repeat it then. And one person said, why do you think we keep coming back? We want to hear it again. So my Denver story has been very useful. And it's useful to me personally because it helps you get perspective. You cannot always control what's going on in society or in your life. You can, to some degree, control how you deal with it. And that's the important thing.
I love that. I feel as though there are so many stories that we encounter in our lives that in the moment they feel awful. Sometimes I even laugh in the back of my head that I hope one day this becomes funny or that it becomes meaningful or that I can find levity in it. Is there any bit of advice or guidance or anything that we might have missed in this?
Well, I think one of my mantras is today is not forever. And if we can keep that perspective, and when you get to be my age, which is really quite exciting, to be my age. I mean, it really is. It's an unbelievable. And you look over your life, because I'm in my 90s, and you look over your whole life and you realize that the times that you thought were miserable and that you wouldn't make it, and you look back and you're smiling and laughing and you've survived, it's a very nice feeling. So if everybody can remember that today is not forever, that you have power to change the way you cope with things, to change your resources for coping, and to change your perspective. If we can feel a sense of agency, a sense of power, because we have some control, that's very important.
Nancy, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, your expertise, and for being with me today.
Well, thank you for asking me. I really enjoyed it.
What was the most appealing to you, or what's your biggest takeaway?
Nancy, for example, she's found a sense of purpose and belonging and some way to use her expertise all throughout her lifetime. So even in her retirement, she's helping other retirees and helping those that are seniors in Florida to get through this time. And I just feel like that onto itself is an inspiration. And I hope that I can live a life that is with that much intentionality behind it and able to find my best way to serve people, regardless of what life stage I'm in. So I just think that overarching picture of Nancy's interview really resonated with me. And hey, she's written 10 plus books on this area. So I can imagine that, as she was saying in the Denver story, if she doesn't take her own advice, do the words mean anything? So I really appreciate that about her, that she seems like she really reflects on everything.
Oh, yes.
What were the parts of the interviews that were your favorite or things that resonated with you the closest?
The conclusion that Nancy mentioned, don't complain, just change whatever you can change. Maybe it's just 5%, 1% of the big picture that you would like to change, but you can do some change somewhere. And in this long transition time of not knowing when and where to have a new job and where to settle and so on, I was complaining a lot, and it's just negative energy. So yeah, this really, really resonated with me and touched me.
I feel like there's also a sense of negative hangover as well, that even if you have a new job, you've moved to a new place, because of all the stress that builds up over that time, it's hard to stop that mindset. Did you ever find in your case that it continued to linger longer than you wanted it to?
Yes, definitely. There are two things to keep me away from this. One is to tell myself, stop complaining, just change. And the other thing, of course, is my daughter. She is now 16 months and she just lives in the day. And since she was born, it feels like this transition time has a very different meaning, because the pace in which she's learning new things and developing is so fast. And of course, with kids, you see time passing by so differently that just looking at her makes me think, like, okay, like, just do something new today, change something, or be just happy and laugh at people like she does.
Yeah, I can fully see that. It keeps you in the moment, it keeps you present, and it contextualizes that the things that feel like problems, when you probably look at her, you're thinking, it's not a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
So now, having heard these interviewees, let's think a little bit more intentionally about the post-pandemic world. And I use that in quotes because we're currently in the thick of it still, but I think we just don't know what else to call it. So for lack of a better term, in the post-pandemic world, how do you want to make your transitions, career or otherwise, better? What guidance would you give others if you're thinking about it?
It's a great, but I also think a difficult question. I would say there are two answers that I would have. One is be mindful. And it sounds very spiritual, but I really think it's so important to be connected to what you do and how you feel and what you feel and what you do. And I mean, that's the reason why people like Mary resigned from her job and now do what they really want. And I think for many reasons, not only because we had the time to sit at home and to be in home office, but also many people felt, and I would include myself here, the fragility of life. And I think people got a different sense of mortality, to put it in one sentence. So maybe my second thought is, for the so-called post-pandemic world, is a question I would now rather ask me than I did before. Is it worth it? Whatever you do, is it worth it?
Yeah, I think that's really smart. And I do have that same concept about the mortality end. And I know that seems a little bit bleak, but I fully agree with you. I think what happens is we now have a little bit of a lens of having stepped back from our lives. It's very unusual to have an occasion to fully step back from your life and to be forced to reflect on what was normal and what is no longer normal. And I feel as though, at least from my end, I've been trying to live with more intentionality. I say try, because it's a constant effort, because we're still the same people that we were back then, but a lot of the exposures are different. So it's working with old us, but in a new context. So hopefully I can get new me to be more on board with being calm and to take things as things come along and to be very intentional about decision making. So these are a lot of lofty goals.
Yes.
But speaking of lofty goals, do you have a New Year's resolution for 2022? And if so, what is it?
Very simple one, do more sports. Just because it really helps me to digest. Sport helped me to find some sort of connection to myself, to my thoughts, to structure my thoughts, to organize this mess in my mind. What about you?
The sad thing is, I think the person who asked the question should always come up with their own answer.
Of
but
course.
Have I not? Not clearly. I think generally it is around the same approximation of what you're saying. Doing things that feed my soul a little bit more, that I feel alive and present and happy. I think happiness will be something that I really try to focus on. There was a part of the interview with Mary that at the very end I said, well, if I ever end up in Florida, I will look you up. And Florida is a very big state. If you drive from the north to the south, I believe it's something like 6.5 or 7 hours. My husband and I haven't really gone anywhere that far away. We haven't flown this whole pandemic. And so the both of us have been inside way too long. And we decided, okay, where do we find something that's the weather's a little bit better? And so we limited that down to a few places. And well, he said, well, we haven't been to Fort Lauderdale. How about we go there? So over this past break, I went to Fort Lauderdale. Ooh. And that is apparently 45 minutes from where Mary is. And when I realized that, I very quickly, because this was only weeks beforehand, sent her an email saying, hey, can I book a time with you to have a surf lesson? I'm someone who needs female empowerment, so I will go down. I did convince my husband to join me, so that worked out well. Had a surf lesson.
Cool.
So while that seems like a little bit of a nebulous New Year's resolution, I feel like it's something that I've been trying to do for the few months leading up to 2022, but I feel like I can be better at it. And I'm really looking forward to just taking life as it comes, maybe pick up some hobbies, enjoy life, be intentional, see people, and that's about it. Matthias, thank you so much for being here.
Stephanie, it was very insightful. Looking forward to what this year unfolds.
Yes, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Happy transition time.
Thank you all for listening to this episode of Record of Change. So again, make sure to check out our social media. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or check out our website, recordofchange.com, for further information about our interviewees and a little bit about us behind the scenes, which includes some of the documenting evidence that, yes, I did actually meet Mary for a surfing lesson. So that is all on our social media. Make sure to follow us and subscribe to Record of Change in your favorite podcasting platform. Thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to seeing you in the next episode.